Now, Monitor brings you Meet the Press, the famous interview program produced by Lawrence Spivak, which has won so many top awards throughout the years. Ready for the unrehearsed conference are four of America's top reporters to talk with the new Secretary of Commerce, Luther B. Hodges. Mr. Hodges was formerly governor of North Carolina and is the first cabinet member in the new administration to appear on a panel interview program. Now, here is the moderator of Meet the Press, Ned Brooks.
President Kennedy on Thursday submitted to Congress his program for relieving unemployment and speeding up the nation's economic growth. One of the agencies most closely allied with the president on this program is the Department of Commerce. Its function is defined as helping business and government to achieve full production and full employment. Our guest today is the new Secretary of Commerce, Mr. Luther Hodges. He has had long experience both in business and government. He began his career in the textile industry, later becoming vice president of Marshall Field & Company. In government service, he has held positions in price control administration, agriculture, and the foreign aid program. In January, he concluded 6 years as the governor of North Carolina. Now we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Secretary, the president in his recent message to Congress painted a rather gloomy picture of the state of our economy. Are we really in bad shape, or is it just that we ought to be doing better and could do better?
I think it's the latter, Mr. Spivak. We are in bad shape statistically in our employment or unemployment, and in our part-time employment and other phases referred to by the president. In the long run, I think Mr. Kennedy feels, as I do and many others, that the country itself can move forward, and can move forward vigorously, and we're in good shape over the long run, but at the moment, we're in bad shape comparatively. And I think Mr. Kennedy's idea was to tell the people the truth about certain phases of it and hope he would challenge them to do better.
Is there any country in the world today better off comparatively than we are economically?
I suppose if you took all of the indices and all of the standards and guides, the answer would be no, there isn't any. But for the moment, comparatively, there are other industrial nations, particularly Western Europe, that are going forward at a larger or higher economic rate of growth than we are and are doing a little better employment-wise. I could give some instances of that if necessary.
In short, the thing that seems to worry you and President Kennedy is that we're just not doing all that we ought to be doing, not that we're really in bad shape economically.
I think that's right.
Is there any certainty in your mind that the steps proposed on Thursday by President Kennedy, if executed, will end this recession?
I think it would help end it. I think what you need is to take care of a few of these bad spots, such as the unemployment. And then I think that we can get a renewed interest and faith in the higher production, higher rate of growth, a greater desire to get a more productivity on the part of the business people and the labor. I think we'll move from there.
Mr. Secretary, can you tell us whether business leaders were consulted by President Kennedy before he proposed the steps he did, and can you tell us how they reacted to those steps?
I cannot answer for Mr. Kennedy as to whom he talked to. He had much advice from many people, including the Department of Commerce, which has many contacts. The reaction generally has been good because our business community people were pleasantly surprised at the vigor and the decisiveness of the new president. So I think that's going to bring us a lot of good in the future.
Mr. Gemmel.
Mr. Secretary, your Department of Commerce grinds out statistics at a prodigious rate. One recent set I noticed showed that American companies have invested in more than 10,000 foreign enterprises. More than $30 billion has been put out now, and that's very nearly three times what it was a decade ago. How do you size up the impact of this on the American economy?
Well, in the long run, Mr. Gimbel, will be good. At the moment, it looks like it's a disproportionate approach to the question of the balance of payments and unfavorable situation. Actually, in the long run, it means a more vigorous economy means we'll have to be more competitive in what we do in meeting these new plants abroad as well as the old established plants. Means better dividends and so forth in the future for us. I think it's a good sign.
How far do you think it will and should go? Now, I've been over looking at some of these plants. You go into the headquarters offices and they show you blueprints with plans for tripling, quadrupling their capacity within a few years.
I think that's a very intelligent question. And I think the answer is that it will go fast and will go out of proportion to what it ought to be probably until this industrial machine of ours gets more competitive, more modern in its equipment, and does a better job cost-wise.
Mr. Reston.
Well, Governor, following up on that same question, how are you going to follow this trend without having the kind of trend you've seen in the South toward protectionism in our own country?
You will have, Mr. Reston, certain segments of the overall American industry which will ask for protection. Basically, this country, when it's running at its best efficiency, can meet most any kind of competition, even though it may be lower wages elsewhere. So I think that overall, we are not going to have any great trouble. Now, there will be certain adjustments we may have to make for certain small segments.
Well, Governor, can you do this without dealing with your price level overseas? Aren't we priced out of the market, the export market, in some fields already?
Yes, we are.
What are they, sir?
Well, you're priced out of the market on any export of many of our soft goods and certain of our component parts for electronic things of that character.
Well, what do you do about that? How do you deal with the competition, say, of Germany and France, unless you get these prices down?
We must strengthen our industrial machine. That's going to call for many things. You're getting into technical situations and taxes, tax adjustments, tax changes by the Treasury and the Congress. The economy of Germany and Japan, for example, West Germany and Japan, are two of the best examples of those whom we've hated in the past and who now have an industrial machine more modern than ours. Until we can take the other 50% of our machine, industrial machine in this country, and put it on an efficient, competitive basis, we're going to have trouble. But if we do that, we're in better shape.
Does this mean cutting wages?
Not necessarily cutting wages, but it's going to challenge labor for cutting out feather bedding and doing and restrictive practices of other kinds and doing a better job of productivity.
Mr. Harkness.
Mr. Secretary, the statistics that the government releases show all the economic hallmarks of a recession. At the same time, the cost of living is going up. Now, what can this administration do and what will it do about this wage price spiral?
Mr. Harkness, one of the things that the president is trying to do in that regard, in addition to just challenging the people to try to work this thing out, is a recent announcement that he was going to appoint an advisory committee on labor management, which takes in not only the question of their relationships between the two and, shall we say, in bargaining or situations like that, but to say to through this council, we must get our costs down. We must be more competitive. We must consider the public interest, which means cost of living, etc., as we move along in our negotiation.
Mr. Secretary, as I read President Kennedy's address, he seems to think that about 75 days from now, April 1st, will be a turning point, that the economy will either go up or we may be in some very real trouble. Do you look for some emergency action at that time if it doesn't go up something like across-the-board income tax cut?
It could easily be. I don't think it's needed now, and I think he feels the same way. But I would say that in another 2 to 3 months, that if we do not see a turn, seasonal and plus, that we may have to do something more drastic.
Mr. Secretary, on this question of are we in a recession or are we not, when you came in as Secretary of Commerce, did you find that the past administration, I've been told this, that the past administration censored or blue-penciled some rather pessimistic reports? For instance, they did not put out one on predicting a sharp decline in automobile production.
Well, I saw, sir, in the press that there had been some conflict in the department and the government about that.
I was asking you.
Yeah. I have not actually seen evidences of that.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Secretary, the cost of living in December reached another all-time high. Can you give the American people any idea whether it's going to cost them more in 1961 to live than it did in 1960?
I don't see much hope for lowering it.
Do you think you're going to be able to stop the increase in cost of living by the measures you've taken? Or are they going to increase the cost of living because the cost of the measures themselves?
I am not enough of an expert on a prediction to say how much it would go up, but I'd be inclined to think it's going to hold high and maybe go up a little further.
Mr. Secretary, the Secretary of Labor and the Secretary of Agriculture are powerful spokesmen for their segment of the economy. How do you look upon your job as the Secretary of Commerce?
I look upon our job as Secretary of Commerce in exactly the same way that you're indicating about labor and agriculture. Without any criticism of the past, it's my feeling that the Department of Commerce has failed to carry through on the injunction given it when it was formed, namely to represent business and industry and to advise the President on that.
Aren't you going to, of necessity, run into conflict with the Secretary of Labor and possibly the Secretary of Agriculture then if you defend business as they defend their segment of India? Well,
you might say, Mr. Spivak, that theoretically that's true. Actually, the Secretary of Agriculture and the Secretary of Labor and I are going to get along all right. Many times it depends on whether or not the President has a good team on a cooperative basis. I think that normally the business community says, well, you can't get along with labor, and normally vice versa, labor. But I don't believe that's necessarily true.
Well, I'd like, if I may, to take two examples. Business, for example, has complained that wage increases have been due to powerful union pressure and not increased productivity. Now, do you agree with that?
I think there's been some of that. Yes, sir.
Well, now, do you think that the Secretary of Labor is likely to agree with that?
I'd be inclined to think that Mr. Goldberg, he's a perfectly high-grade person, intellectually honest, that he'd have to say that on occasions that has been true.
One more thing. The Democratic platform promised the repeal of the provision of the Taft-Hartley Act, which permits states to have right-to-work laws. Now, you had a right-to-work law in North Carolina, and you saw how it worked. Did it work against the interests of the people and against labor in North Carolina?
No, I don't think it did. I think that basically the organized labor felt that it was a slap against them. Actually, it never had any ulterior effects as far as we could say.
Now, do you think that you and the Secretary of Labor, for example, are going to be able to agree should be repealed?
I doubt if we would agree on that phase.
Mr. Kimmel.
Let's say that you and Secretary Goldberg do reach perfect agreement on how to proceed on this wage and price decision matter, which is so important to our cost level. Now, we have a great auto struggle, presumably, emerging this year.
Right.
Could you tell us at all how this philosophy would be applied? Will they really try to keep the auto workers from getting less than they could get from the companies?
No. It would not be approached on that basis. But I think it would be pointed out to them before they got into a life and death struggle that you were talking about. It'd be pointed out to them that there are certain situations, including this international competition that we must meet, the interests of the public, which many times has not been pointed out, and that may have some effect on both sides.
I suppose the auto workers exercise great restraint. Are you going to approach the auto companies to hold their prices down? Is there any real pressure there?
I would think that would naturally come. I think they ought to hold them down if that is done.
Mr. Secretary, one of the bills that has high priority in the President's program is the so-called Depressed Areas Bill. But many people say that that would take a great length of time to put into operation, building factories and setting up the machinery for loans and so forth. How long do you think it would take to receive any benefit from that particular measure?
I think the Depressed Areas Bill is not only the matter of making loans and maybe of opening up factories, either from old buildings or new ones, but it's getting all segments of the government inspired to do something, whether it's unemployment benefits or whether it's food, things of that character. It naturally was going to take quite a few months to do that, but I believe that we can get started on it within 30 or 60 days after the bill is passed.
Mr. Reston.
Governor, in the recent years, the South was one of the great free trade areas of the Union, and now it has tended to go toward protectionism. Is this a serious trend in your judgment in the national interest and also in the interest of the South?
Not necessarily, Mr. Reston. You have to go back to the history of the South. It used to export raw cotton primarily. They wanted to sell abroad. And now it manufactures textiles and a few things of that character, and it has a different interest. But I think the South is very rapidly becoming a part of the whole national picture, and I don't see any use of setting it aside from the rest of the nation.
But if the South, and it's not unlike other areas in this, then demands protection, for example, in your own former industry of textiles, against, say, the imports of textiles from Japan, how is that going to be reconciled with the loosening of trade policy of the administration as a whole?
Well, it'll have to be reconciled in that the textile industry is part of the total economy of the country, and the South is part of the total nation. Actually, the biggest part of our exports, which are running about $20 billion, are going along very well. The imports, the certain segments of textile industry are being hurt by it. But there are ways of handling those specific hardship cases which the textile industry knows about, and the Tariff Commission, not our department necessarily. And I believe that we can take care of the few isolated instances and still carry on an international trade, which we must have if this country is to maintain its leadership.
During the campaign, there was a lot of talk about new ideas in this field. For example, is there any thought in this administration of talking not about the common market and its conflict with the outer seven in Europe, but of talking about a common market for the whole Atlantic?
I think in the long run, sir, that not only the six nations forming the inner group, but the other seven nations are going to have to gradually get together, and in our GATT negotiations, we must make our trades with them on the basis that will be fair to all, the favor nation clause or whatever else you have.
Mr. Harkness.
That's Secretary Goldberg, who seems to be quite a spokesman for business, incidentally, according to his press club speech the other day, estimated that we should spend in this country $75 to $90 billion to modernize a rather obsolescent plant capacity so we can compete abroad. Well, where in the world is American business going to get $75 to $90 billion in these recession periods?
Well, because this recession period is not going to last if we do the things we're talking about and the country moves forward as it will. And that's a lot of money, but I think that if the government did something in connection with an accelerated depreciation schedule that would allow these companies to find money from their depreciation, and that would inspire investors of large money in putting money into capital investment, I think we can go a long ways toward bringing this industrial machine up to date, which is what he's talking about.
Are you predicting there that President Kennedy will recommend or will support a pro-business tax revision?
Yes, I can't say what he's going to do, but I'll say this. I would advise him to take a very hard look at the question of accelerated depreciation and getting us more competitive with our people abroad who are running rings around us along certain lines.
I assume that you have so advised him.
I have.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Secretary, a recent article in the Reader's Digest said this: much of Germany's amazing economic rebirth was the result of policies Mr. Hodges either devised or applied. Can you tell us anything about the policies you used for the rebirth of Germany which might be applicable to this country?
Well, it's no different from what we know in this country. The one difference between what's happened in Germany when we were there in 1950 and give this advice, which is a two kind of remark, incidentally, is that they have gotten modern in their machine and we are still somewhat obsolete. Actually, what we said to them there, get down to simplification, quit making 48 different designs on a freezer or a food locker. get in your time study people and see how the best way to do it. The things that's made this country great, we suggested over there in 1950, and they have come through frighteningly well.
Mr. Secretary, one other question. As a Southern governor, you had a good deal of experience with industry in the South and a good deal of experience on segregation. As a matter of fact, I think what you did on segregation was the most highly praised of any governor in the South. Do you think that segregation has had an adverse effect on the economic development of the South in any way?
I checked that very carefully during the last several years, Mr. Spivak. It's hard to identify that it actually stopped X number of companies from going in. I'm sure it had some effect, but no great effect.
Do you see any way out for the South if it wants to develop economically, though, to put an end to segregation?
I think the South is coming faster than anybody had anticipated that it would. It's doing that in spite of this particular social situation at the present time. I think it'll continue that way.
Mr. Kimmel.
The South certainly does seem to be getting many new factories. You brought many of them to North Carolina. You did this without a great federal program for distressed or depressed areas. Suddenly we need one. Why?
Well, I think that much of this distressed area activity needs to be done in certain places, such as, you say, where coal mines have gone out, or where other situations have just simply turned completely around. In North Carolina, we didn't have that. But I think along with trying to be sympathetic and compassionate with the idea of taking care of distressed areas, you've got to keep in mind they're distressed people as well as distressed areas. You ought to challenge the local community, state and local, to do all it can while the federal government is trying to do some of the other.
Certainly, one would have compassion for the people. Are all of the localities in which they live really prime candidates for development or redevelopment? Is an abandoned coal mine an area which is good for raw materials and marketing of a new product?
Possibly not, Mr. Gimmel. They may find a situation like that, and I'm going to say something probably sound very revolutionary, and I don't think even Mr. Douglas wanted to mention that you may have to retrain and resettle some people in those particular cases.
We have about 3 minutes, I believe. Mr. Reston.
Governor, let me ask you a philosophic question. When the president was making his inaugural address, he said to the people, ask not what the nation can do for you, but ask what you can do for the nation. And I think this was extremely well received out through the country. But when you go home and a man says to you, how shall I respond to that? What do you tell him?
I tell him just what I've been telling people in the last 2.5 to 3 weeks where I've been trying to hire them. I've been talking to people that are making 10 times what we can pay them in government, 5 to 10 times, literally that. And I said to them, is it not time for you to do something for your country? You've been making money, you've been putting it aside, you've been trying to have the creature comforts of life. Some of us had better go and try to help the country and sustain it. Give it something. Otherwise, our children and grandchildren won't be getting anything from the government, because unless we can rescue some of the situations we're facing, we're in trouble.
This is in terms of getting people to come Washington, is it?
That's right, but I'd say...
Now, what about
thing.
Labor, for
All right,
example?
I'd say
what do you say to them?
I would say to labor this. American labor is, by and large, wonderful people, wonderful citizens, patriotic. But you've got some leaders and you've got some people who are simply trying to get all they can for themselves and their own groups without any regard for the good of the country. I say to them, it's high time that you said to your people, we are first Americans, and then labor unionists or managers or owners or whatnot. And it's time that you cut out restrictive practices. It's time that management cut out any undue practices of their own or extraordinary profits while people are suffering elsewhere. Let's all get to be for America and then represent our own segments.
Mr. Harkness.
Mr. Secretary, we've been talking largely about big business in terms of the economy this afternoon. The failures of little business, rather alarming. Now, what do you see that can be done for the little business man?
The great deal of bankruptcies and failures, more than at any time in many years, Mr. Harkness. Actually, the little man has not been able to cut through much of the red tape of the federal government and take this export. Let me give you one quick illustration. On this export business, we must move up strongly and considerably our export trade. We're doing about $19 to $20 billion now. It's got to go still high in order to arrest this imbalance of payments. If we can get what has been referred to as a mother hen concept of some big organization to get around it 20 or 30 little companies or 200 or 300 little companies and teach them how to export and cut through the red tape, we can help them in that specific thing.
Gentlemen, I think that at that point we'll have to discontinue our questions. I see that our time is up.
And our thanks to Secretary of Commerce Luther B. Hodges and to the members of the panel, Henry Gemmell of the Wall Street Journal, James Reston of the New York Times, Richard Harkness of NBC News, and Mr. Lawrence Spivak.